First meeting of the Desert Healthcare District, and I'd like to ask Andrea to call the roll, please.
Okay, we have Director Wortham
here,
Director Hazen, Director Matthews
here,
Vice President Rogers
here,
and President Zindel
here. And do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
There is one correction in that we will be adding the resolution that was carried over from the previous meeting.
As amended.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And I'd like to ask Director Wortham to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. We have a real flag this time.
Yay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We now have a time for public comment for items that are in the public interest and under the jurisdiction of the district but are not on today's agenda. We have a policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. The board cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. And if anybody has public comment, please come to the front center of the room and we'll give you a microphone and we're happy to hear your comment. Hearing no public comment, we'll move on to the consent agenda. There is one change, maybe two changes in the minutes. The first to the minutes of the special meeting of the board on September 25th. Mr. Ezra Kaufman's comments were mistranscribed, and I want to correct them. It should read, Mr. Kaufman explained that the district should not be researching lease revenue to pay for the expansion. He's currently opposed to utilizing any current or future facility lease revenues to fund the expansion. So that's one change. Is there another change in terms of Director Wortham's presence?
Yeah, we're going to have to go back and review.
Okay, we'll do that later then. Do I have a motion to accept the consent agenda as amended?
Are we going to hold it until her issues are taken care of?
No.
On the minute?
No, we'll correct it later at a future time. It's not substantive.
Okay.
We spoke about it.
Yeah. Okay. I so move.
There's a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. We carried over an item from the last meeting having to do with a resolution. Do you have that in front of you? Okay. Do you have that?
Oh, I don't.
The resolution was actually in the prior packet, prior to this meeting.
Right.
That's what you're searching for.
I know, I'm just trying to find it.
Mr. President, the reason we held it is so that Director Hazen could get here, so if you want to take it up now, that's fine, but then I would move it to new business or old business. Because, I mean, it is. I mean, the objective was to get every director here to vote on one of the most critical issues facing
That's fine.
The healthcare district.
That's fine. Is
Are
there any
cool
objection
Are you
to that?
That?
Then we'll do that.
And the proper place is probably old business, but if you didn't, I'd put in new, but it's really not new. It's been well vetted. Everybody's talking about it. I think it's important to get everybody's vote.
Fine. Then we will move on to item F, which is the resources and philanthropy. The first is consideration to approve Joslyn Center, and I'm going to turn to, I believe, our chief operating officer.
John is going to present on number one and two first. Okay, thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to present these two grant requests. Thank you very much for this opportunity for us to be able to present these two grant requests to the board tonight. The first one is from Joslyn Center. They are asking a request of $112,500, which staff is recommending approval to support their behavior services program at their new wellness center. According, if you read the staff report, it does meet with one of our community health focus areas of access to primary care and behavior health access, supporting program services and workforce development. development efforts on increased access to primary care and behavioral health services for Coachella Valley residents. This is a program that was a pilot program, and now they are looking to expand the programs by creating a robust community engagement plan. The use of funds will support four components of this four main evidence-based programs, which I wanted to emphasize: evidence-based, aging mastery, problem-solving, cognitive behavior therapy, brain boot camp, and Go for Life. The funding will be provided by licensed clinical social workers with two behavioral health program interns. And I think it's rather exciting that they want to expand this and expand it to a younger senior population. And I think I might be taking the course myself, considering that I have issues and challenges with getting old. So we have in the audience with us, we do have Jack Newby, who is executive director, and he's brought quite a few members of his board. There will also be an evaluation performed by Hark. Jen is here as well, so I don't know if the board has our board has any questions for them, or they have any comments that they want to make before you make your decision.
Chris, do you have any comments you want to make? Mr. Newby.
Yes, first I would like to thank the board of directors of the Desert Healthcare District for considering this grant, and also staff Lisa Houston and Donna Craig. I have to say we're very grateful for their assistance in getting this all put together and put before you. And now I would like to introduce the board of the Joslyn Center to show you that this is really something that they are very supportive of. So if you would all please stand.
Well.
So this is an exciting project for the Joslyn Center. It's a unique project, and it's a holistic approach to health and wellness, and we appreciate your consideration of the proposal.
Hi, I'm Ed Walsh. I'm vice president of the board, and just a couple of comments. I also sit on the California Commission on Aging, and I serve as chair right now to the commission. And we've had meetings. I've been on the commission as a governor's appointee for the last 6 years and have meetings across the state. And I can tell you, this is a very unique concept. To have some senior centers have some of those pieces here, some pieces there, but to have all these pieces under one roof and look at the total person and what we're doing with that total person is a great opportunity for really a demonstration of this concept. And if successful, could be replicable to other parts of the valley or the state. So I encourage your support.
Do any board members have any questions or comments?
I had a question. I had a question about the age groups and focus and different needs that you're going to address.
Yes, we're looking at the age group. The Aging Mastery Program was started by the National Council on Aging to help people navigate the aging process and getting older and the issues that they would have to deal with that. So that's a program that would be, you know, from people age 55 on up, because individuals, and it's a 10-course program. And the program deals with various issues that individuals face as they grow older, whether it's relationships, sleep, exercise, health issues, medication issues. It's a very well put together program, and it meshes well with our other programs in terms of we have an exercise program that's available to put people into that. We have the cognitive behavior therapy program, that the problem-solving program. So if someone, for instance, in the Aging Mastery Program should say, I'm really having problems with finances or I'm having problems with relationships, we would have an immediate way to get them into another program. So it's really the gamut of older adults age 55 and above.
And people who are eligible to participate? Location? Do they have to live near in the area to, I mean, can they live in Cathedral City, I mean, Palm Springs or
Oh, yes.
Indio to yes. participate?
Yes. yes, the program is open to, hopefully the whole expanded district was open to anyone who's a resident of the district, and we anticipate that as the district currently stands, before the election, that there would be a portion of people from outside what the current district boundaries are that would be participating in the program.
Many of you know that I'm a geriatric specialist, so I'm very much in favor of this program. The reason I really like this program is that one of the things we learn in geriatrics is that it's not just the medical issues, it's the financial and the psychosocial issues, and you cannot look at one without the others, and you've integrated this together, and congratulations on that. I was going to ask you another question that I know the answer to, but you just answered it, and that's that you do serve people on both sides of Cook Street, don't you?
Yes.
Jack, I read this grant with great interest, and you and I have worked on senior issues for a long time. How long has that been?
I won't tell if you won't.
No, I need my memory refreshed.
He doesn't remember.
Probably going on 20 years.
Yeah. And I've reached the age where I'm reading this now and going, I can use that, and I can use that, when we were doing a great, well-written grant, and I would move approval.
Another question.
So you mentioned that some of the funding is going to be applied offer services for people in the expanded district, and I know that we have kind of a limit on the amount of funds that we're going to be able to grant. So would that be a separate issue, or how is that mixed in with this?
I think the primary benefits will be for the people in the district.
In the current district.
And they track all of that stuff.
Okay.
So.
And then and once the district's expanded, we could go and fund from a different pool of funds.
Yeah.
Okay. I second the motion.
Okay, any more discussion? Then we'll call the roll.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye. Okay, congratulations. Now you do have to stay to the rest of the meeting.
No, you
don't. Hey, Jenna, you have to stay the rest of the meeting. All right.
Go watch the Dodgers game.
The next item is consideration to approve Desert Arc, and again, I will ask Donna to speak to it.
Again, thank you for the opportunity to be able to present this grant to your consideration. Desert Arc has a program called Desert Arc Healthcare Program. They're asking for $167,738 to support that program in specific three components. Two licensed vocational nurses that attend to the medical needs of this very vulnerable clientele. And if necessary, they're there to help Desert Arc staff as well with any medical needs. It allows an attending physician consultant to oversee the medical license requirements for the adult daycare center and to provide specialized training to Desert Arc staff in the behavior management program. If you have any questions, Richard Bolacco from the executive director. Oh, there it is. He's here with some of his staff. And,
Richard, did you want to say something?
Well, thank you for considering our grant request. It's an honor to be here tonight. I'd like to quickly introduce our staff here. Ruth Goodsell, Director of Client Services, Catherine, who is our Director of Fund Development, and Liz Nobby, who wrote the grant. So, I want to. And I'm here to answer any questions you might have. Desert Arc is soon celebrating 60 years here in the desert. So we will have an open house on November 14th, and you're certainly invited, provided Donna with some invitations there. It would be an honor to have you there to see a lot of the things we do. The nurses are a very integral part of what we do here, and they provide phenomenal services that otherwise people might be using and draining the medical services here on an emergency basis, where the nurses help people and they provide great service. We have a total of 700 clients, of which 235 of them will live in the current healthcare district. Hopefully soon to say all 700 live in the healthcare district. So with that, I'm here to answer any questions you might have regarding the grant request.
Any questions or comments?
So
So the two nurses that we're funding, they're full-time and they're on staff on location?
Yeah, they're full-time, yes. And they're there Monday through Friday, and they're busy all day.
Great, thank you.
Any other comments? I move that we accept the proposal.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Director Huerta?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye. And now we're going to consider to approve the Ready, Set, Swim grant to the Desert Healthcare Foundation. And who shall I turn to now? Our COO, Lisa Houston.
Good evening, Board of Directors and Chair. As per our meeting in September, we brought forth some concerns we had in our Ready, Set, Swim program. Board gave staff guidance to move forward and work with Desert Rec and our other partnering agencies to make sure that we did not lose time with Ready, Set, Swim and started it immediately. We have successfully put together a very good partnership with Desert Rec, Palm Springs Boys and Girls Club, Cathedral City Boys and Girls Club, the Furby Pool up in DHS, which is the city of Desert Hot Springs. And we're excited to say that we are bringing forward the request under budget. We were given up to 145, and as you can see, we will not exceed the 136. And I'd like to just pass it on to Alejandro just to talk about how we kicked it off on Monday.
So we had other partners ready, per pending the approval of the board. Oops, sorry. So we had other partners ready, just pending the approval of the board, and as Lisa mentioned, just finding the right budget and staffing for the program for the Desert Rec and the Boys and Girls Club of Palm Springs. We also had a Palm Springs Unified School District that provides in-kind transportation from each of the participating schools to the Boys and Girls Club of Palm Springs or the Furby Aquatic Center in Desert Hot Springs. We successfully kicked off the program Monday, October 22nd, with 35 children participating from Cielo Vista Charter Elementary. They're very excited, very good turnout. The parents are really excited. And today they had their first nutrition education lesson. As you all know, the Ready, Set, Swim program combines physical activity through the swimming component and also nutrition education that is provided by a health educator from the Riverside University Health System Public Health Department. So we're very grateful that the program is up and running, and thank you.
So just in wrapping that, we did want to bring to the attention of the board that our partnership with Desert Recreational District is actually a growing partnership. We had several different conversations about potential ways that we can work together in the future. The other thing we would, as staff, like to bring to the board's attention is we will have in the near future Ready, Set, Swim Junior that is a summertime program. So we would like to get some guidance from the board now on how you would like to see us proceed forward on Ready, Set, Swim Junior. And also our NEOP program, which is the Nutrition Education Obesity Prevention Program, that is currently grant funded through a federal grant through the County of Riverside. However, there is going to be conversation come this November on trying to determine which way the NEOP program is going to go in the future. So staff would like some guidance from the board if we should pursue continuing down this path, and if we should also be considering the concept of expanding with the possibility of Measure BB being passed in November.
Any board members want to make any comments?
Well, I think we should explore it and look at the parameters and the cost. It's a successful program. We've had some definitive positive results, so I would be in favor of exploring it.
I hate to be the naysayer, but when we're done with the expansion, which is likely to pass, look at our balance sheet. I think after you take out our current commitments and whatever, we have $33 million. And the new board, whoever that may be, is going to have to sort out what to do with that budget. think the ongoing revenue and things like that are going to work and fairly easy to figure out. You know, I support the notion of the expansion. I was very uncomfortable that there's no tax revenue coming in, and all the tax revenue is coming from the current district, that's a problem. I fear for when we get around to budgeting next year in June, that's going to be a tough challenge unless funds are somehow figured out. And what we're going to do, and I know there's a handful of proposals of where to get money then, but we're in a precarious position. It would not surprise me if 5 years from now, at the pace we're running, with the grant budget we're running, and what we're running, we'd be staring at fiscal insolvency. And the truth is that as we get into the valuations and the things going on, we're going to have to look hard find a method to keep the ongoing programs in the district sustainable. I think this is, those of you who got your grants in this year, congratulations. I have no idea what next year is going to look like, but we're going to have to plan it out because we are running out of money. Thank you.
I've also, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I've also been told by our electeds who helped pass this Measure BB legislation that they will work with the district on future funding of all of our programs, that we shouldn't be limited to what we see that's on our books right now, that there are possibilities for funding our expansion and programs in the expanded areas are open and will be continued.
I think this is actually a good test case, let's call it, in that we have a program that is successful, that's operational, and I'd like to see it duplicated in the East Valley, but with some different funding. And I think that there are recreation districts that are different in the East Valley. There are school districts that are different in the East Valley. And rather than them each having to recreate the wheel, we've done it. We know how to do it, and let's partner our expertise with their money and some of our money maybe and staff to move it forward. So I'd like to see us work in the next few months to find those resources so that when it comes time to asking the question, can we expand this to the East Valley, that we'll have all those issues clarified.
Thank you. Perfect.
Okay, is there any more discussion on this item? If not, we will call the question.
The roll?
Have we made a motion?
Okay, I move we accept the recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
There's no further discussion, roll call.
Okay, Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye. Okay. The next item, G, I'm going to call upon Chris Christensen, our interim CEO, to introduce work that's been being done by the New Providers Facilities Programs and Services Ad Hoc Committee. And take it away, Chris.
All right, so I think several of you are aware that the district has engaged with a process over the last several months under the Ad Hoc Committee of New Providers, Facilities, Programs, and Services, which is part of our strategic plan. And part of that has had to do with looking at, you know, the landscape of, you know, what the healthcare needs are, not only the current district, but potential expanded area with regard to providers, facilities, et cetera. One component of that is facility that is our largest asset, the Desert Regional Medical Center. And a few months ago, the board engaged with a couple of separate consultants, one to be looking at the seismic needs of the hospital, as well as doing an appraisal valuation of the hospital in a process of due diligence to better make decisions for the future of what the district is doing with regard to facilities and programs, etc. So there's been a lot of a very extensive amount of work that has been done behind this. The consultants that the district board has chose to engage is called VMG Health, and they are here to present the appraisal report that was completed, and would like to introduce Colin McDermott, general partner of VMG Health. And I apologize, Blake, last name I forget, so forgive me on that. So welcome.
I tend to talk slow and not loud, so just please, you know, raise your hand if you can't hear me, or if I'm going too slow or too fast. This is my colleague Blake Madden, and as Chris introduced, we were retained by the district several months ago to start the process to understand what is the business enterprise value of Desert Regional Medical Center, with the understanding that it's still under lease to the current operator. We, on Friday of last week, our valuation report has been posted in the public domain, and one of the things that the board asked me to do was come here today and really introduce what we've done, what our process was, how we go about valuing a business, and talk a little bit about some of the adjustments that we've proposed given the current lease structure. So just briefly on our firm, my firm is VMG Health. We've got three offices, one in Dallas, one in Nashville, and one in Denver. And we've been in existence since 1995. And our pure focus is healthcare, transaction, and business valuation advisory services. We're up to 150 professionals, and we perform almost 30,000 valuations since inception. As a firm, we've got multiple service lines. With the work that Blake and I do, we're both in the business valuation profession. We also, as a firm, provide strategic decision support, litigation and dispute resolution. We have individuals that work for us that are focused on capital asset appraisal, tables and chairs, really in the healthcare setting, think MRIs, CTs, that type of equipment. Hospital-based real estate, whether it be physical plants of an acute care hospital, our physician office space, or medical office buildings. And we spend a lot of time looking at contractual arrangements in the healthcare space. As the audience, I'm sure, is aware, healthcare is a highly regulated environment, and when a hospital enters into a relationship with a physician, often those contractual arrangements have to be reviewed by a third party. Just a little bit on what our professionals have from an accreditation standpoint. I'm personally a licensed certified public accountant in the state of Texas. I hold the accredited and business valuation designation, and I'm a chartered financial analyst by the CFA Institute. Most of our professionals hold some sort of designation or involved in some professional organization that just furthers the education of what we do. A touch on the types of valuations that we do from a business valuation perspective. This is a summary of some of the work we did in 2017. Heavily focused in acute care, hospital valuations, which is what we're here talking about today, physician surgical hospital valuations, service lines of an acute care hospital, so significant experience in the space that we're talking about. So from a process perspective, I think it's important to talk about what we did. And really, we sat down and we approached it from a two-phase approach. Phase one, really understanding the lease arrangement. Try to get some background on the history, review and read the lease, try to interpret it, make sure we understand it, and then think about, well, how do we approach a business valuation for an organization that's encumbered by an existing lease that has 9 years remaining on the term? As I mentioned, obviously there's original 30-year term on the lease from 1997. The rent was prepaid at inception, and the facility requires seismic upgrades by 2030. So how do you incorporate all of these unique factors into the evaluation process. And then finally, phase two was taking what we learned in phase one and actually incorporating that into a evaluation opinion. So talk a little bit about what evaluation opinion is. From a standard of value perspective, and this is important for the audience to understand, the definition of fair market value. We're approaching this from a hypothetical willing and able buyer and a hypothetical willing and able seller acting at arm's length in an open and unrestricted market when neither is under compulsion to buy nor sell and when both have reasonable knowledge of the facts. So what it's not is strategic or synergistic value. What the distinction there is, synergistic value is value that a specific buyer brings to the table, not a hypothetical buyer or a hypothetical market participant. So understanding the context in which we provide the valuation opinion is important. So for all valuations, we really have to go through the process of considering three separate approaches. The first is the cost approach. And I think about the cost approach quite simply as really a balance sheet based approach. What are the assets that sit on the balance sheet and what are their values from a financial reporting perspective? The second approach is the market-based approach, and we'll get into this in detail, but basically, if you think about buying or selling a home on a price per square foot, it's something to think about that's a metric that you could apply to a subject asset like a business. In our world, we really look towards two financial metrics. One is revenue, and the other is EBITDA, which stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And then finally, the third approach is the income-based methodology or discounted cash flow analysis. And this analysis is most applicable to a specific business because you're developing a financial forecast for the business where you're trying to consider facts and circumstances that surround it, whether it be revenue growth or expenses or uses of cash for capital spend. It's a specific forecast for the subject entity. So talking a little bit about our process, first we say it's like investigation. Gather the data, review the data, try to understand the data, ask questions with management, try to understand the strategic position of the business that we're looking at within the local market, and really just to get our hands around what it is that we're valuing. Once we've got the data, we've had some initial conversations with management, sitting down and really thinking about the operational and financial performance of whatever business that we're looking at. In healthcare, we think about things like payer mix, or service line mix, or volume, whether it be inpatient admissions or outpatient visits, those financial metrics that we look at in the healthcare space. And then the cost side of the house, whether it be staffing or other expenses, medical supply costs, drug costs, and then other uses of cash, and it's something we'll touch on a little bit. Businesses like hospitals are very capital intensive. You've got a big piece of real estate, you've got lots of expensive equipment, and those items don't hit the income statement of the hospital, but they need to be factored in from a cash flow perspective in evaluation. And then finally, once we've taken all the operational data, it's just forming our opinion. And we already touched on it, but really considering three different approaches: cost approach, the market approach, and the income-based approach. So that's the background. It's a little bit on how we do evaluation. And I want to summarize each of those three approaches as we looked at Desert Regional Medical Center. So first, the cost approach. I mentioned earlier, it's really limited in scope. We're really looking at a balance sheet-based approach. What's the working capital? Which working capital is current assets. So it's items like your patient accounts receivable, it's your supplies and inventory on hand, net of your current liabilities, whether it be your accrued salaries and wages from a payroll perspective, or your vendor payables for organizations that are helping you from your day-to-day drug suppliers, things of that nature. And then what's the value of the plant, property, and equipment? This approach yielded a value of about $140 million, $130 million, looking at a normal level of that working capital that I mentioned, plus the net book value, which is a balance sheet-based methodology for the net PP&E. the second approach, and I touched on it briefly, is the market approach. In the space that we look at, we've got two places to go for market data. The first is the public markets. There are organizations that operate acute care hospitals that are traded in the public domain. One of them is Tenet Healthcare, Community Hospital, HCA. There's five or six public hospitals, Quorum, LifePoint, et cetera. So we can go and look at how the market values those public companies and glean some information about those valuations. The second is the merger and acquisition method. There's probably somewhere between 70 and 100 hospital transactions a year for the sale of hospitals. And hospitals are big. So there's information out in the public domain that we could go gather around those sales. And our organization spends a lot of time researching them. We look to the not-for-profit transactions. Many not-for-profit organizations have publicly traded debt. So we can go out and read their bond disclosures when they've made an acquisition and get information. There's the public companies I mentioned. When they buy or sell a hospital, we can get information in the public domain. And then there's Freedom of Information Act. Maybe it's a not-for-profit selling to a for-profit organization and goes under Attorney General review. So we can gather information from multiple sources to get pretty good idea of what those hospitals sold at. Again, really, we focus in on two financial metrics. I mentioned a multiple of revenue and a multiple of EBITDA. So this just summarizes the public companies. Ultimately, this is good information to know. It's something we have to consider to do a thorough valuation analysis. But the public companies are different than a single company, single hospital located in Palm Springs, California. So while we consider it, we're aware of it, ultimately don't rely on it because there's a lack of comparability to these companies to this subject business. I mentioned the private transaction data. This is where we spend a lot of time trying to understand what data is publicly available and what can we glean from it. In our database, we've got 119 transactions that we feel really good about that tell us a price to revenue or a valuation to revenue multiple, and 70 on that multiple of EBITDA that I mentioned. The particular business that we're looking at here is very profitable. So one of the things that we did is really consider how do these multiples change based on the profitability of the subject business. So we ran several screens, and there is a relationship between valuation and the implied EBITDA multiple and the implied revenue multiple. So those were things we took into consideration when valuing the business. In this instance, we elected to utilize 1.1 to 1.3 times revenue. That gives a range of about 560 to 660 million on revenue, and then 5.5 to 7.5 times EBITDA, which gives a range of $520 to $710 million, weighted right at $610 million. Ultimately, this is an approach that we spent a lot of time considering, but really used it to support the next approach that we're going to go through in detail. And this is the income approach. And I mentioned this earlier, and I'm sure if you, without having the document in front of you and looking at it, the income approach, there's a discrete 5-year cash flow projection that's utilized. Business is assumed to be a going concern, continuing into perpetuity, and then that cash flow forecast is brought back to present value using a discount rate that's appropriate for the risk of the cash flow projection stream. I mentioned the benefits of it. It's specific to a subject business. You could be very granular in the assumptions that you utilize, whether it be the revenue forecast, the expense forecast, or the capital expenditure forecast. We're not going through it in detail, but in our document, we've got very specific volume forecast on inpatient admissions, outpatient visits, along with reimbursement growth. It's consideration of payer mix. Think about a healthcare business. One of the biggest payers is the federal government. It's Medicare. So going out there and getting information around reimbursement from CMS and incorporating that, what we know today, into the valuation. There's a page in our document that's really important, and it's what we call our normalized base year. And I want to touch on that a little bit. The hospital currently operates as effectively a subsidiary or a department of a larger organization. So we've got financial statements on the hospital that are truly, you have to normalize them to get a true financial impression of the hospital as though it's operating freestanding. So there's a few adjustments that we made. One of them, and you'll see, is a pretty material adjustment around the hospital quality and assurance funds. That's basically California disproportionate share payments, supplemental dollars. Those dollars weren't approved or funded until, I think, December 15th of 17. So they were accrued for in Q4. Our valuation is using financial data through May 31st of 2018. So that accrual that occurred in the back half of 17, when we start looking through the data through 5 months ended May of 18, we've double counted some of that data based on just the timing of the accounting accrual. And so that's an important adjustment to realize. Second is, there's a couple of things because of the way the hospital sits today, positioned within another organization. Corporate overhead, services that are done at a corporate consolidated level are not pushed down to the hospital. And so we made an assumption around what would be a, call it a management fee for oversight for corporate level functions, and made an adjustment in our analysis for that. And then last that I would say that's more called material is, there's related physician, employed physicians. And those employed physicians in the hospital operations truly go hand in hand. So we made adjustments for those types of considerations. Oh, I jumped ahead, so I'm talking about it, but here's the page on it. So you can see, if you really focus on the supplemental payments, you can see there's about a $20 million, $19 million adjustment to revenue. That's truly an accounting-based timing adjustment. And then on the operating expenses, we've made about $17 or $18 million of total operating expense adjustments. This is to develop cost of services that are done at a corporate centralized office that aren't pushed down to the local operations. So from a normalization standpoint, we go from about $130 million of EBITDA down to about $96 or $97 million. Key assumptions, if you're reviewing the document, to consider: our discount rate. I mentioned that once we develop that cash flow forecast, you've got to discount the cash flows to present value. Put a dollar tomorrow's worth, you know, less than a dollar today. It's that kind of principle, bringing them to today's dollars. I mentioned other uses of cash, whether it be for working capital or capital expenditures. Those are expenditures that do not hit the income statement, but need to be factored in from a valuation perspective. And ultimately, this result was supported by our market approach. It's about $610 million. We've extended the forecast. We generally extend a forecast out 5 years. We've taken it out a little bit longer than that, and you'll see in a couple of slides, we've done that really to understand the lease term. Because now we're looking at a cash flow forecast, the hospital's still under lease, we could use this cash flow forecast to make certain adjustments regarding what's under lease. So from a value selection standpoint, I've already touched on this, did not use the cost approach. Remember, that was about $130-140 million, really a balance sheet based methodology. The market approach, based on the multiple selected, about $610 million, supported by our income based approach. Ultimately, what we relied upon is that income approach, or that discounted cash flow methodology. Now, I mentioned phase one versus phase two, trying to understand what's under lease, what do we need to do from a phase one to bridge to call it a fair market value opinion. When you value a business enterprise, it's inclusive of all the assets of the business. So, and I'm a CPA, so forgive me, but think about net working capital, the tangible assets, the tables, the chairs, the real estate, and then any intangible assets or goodwill. So you've got to understand the components of what comprises a business enterprise before thinking about what adjustments you need to make. So just a couple of adjustments. So we started with that $610 million. The first adjustment is for working capital. working capital again, and I know I've repeated myself a couple times, is that patient accounts receivable, your medical supplies on hand, and net of those current liabilities. At the end of the day, we utilize a normalized level of working capital. Effectively, that's an asset that's controlled by the lessee today. The next adjustment is because the hospital is under lease. So we've utilized that discounted cash flow analysis, the 9 years of discrete cash flows that we talked about, and made an adjustment of about $300,000 for cash flows that are still under the lease and in control of the lessee. And then finally, we've got a couple of items that are really open-ended items. Our valuation doesn't incorporate any sort of seismic improvements and what those dollars might look like. And then from the lease agreement, there's a provision for termination assets, assets that need to be bought back by the district from the lessee. We don't know what those values are today, but acknowledge that there's an adjustment that should be there. So ultimately, try to marry our business enterprise valuation to something and to the operations that are encumbered by that lease. So for the board, that's a summary of our presentation. I don't know if you've had a chance since Friday to look through the document or if you have any questions for me.
Any questions from the board?
I had a few. I'm trying to understand it. So this valuation date is as of when?
We sent our draft opinion in August, at the end of August. So it's valuation date August 28th of 18, where we distributed the document most recently October 15th. It's utilizing data through May of 18, so that's the most current information we had when we did our work. There's always a lag from when you issue a report, a valuation opinion, to when you get financial data. There's a natural lag there because of financial reporting delays.
And I understand you don't have a crystal ball, but everybody I know tells me that hospital business is not one to be one in the future. Is there anything coming down the horizon that would affect this report?
Like from an overall regulatory perspective?
Correct.
Yeah, I think it's the hospital business can be a tough environment, and understanding that's important. I mean, there's good information in the public domain. One thing that I think about, and I'm not an expert on, but is just California Medicaid and the hospital quality insurance funds. There's a lot of money there, and there's potentially risk around that funding in the future. It's something to think about.
I mean, the other market issue is that what's been going on the last 20 years is that there's consolidation and integration both horizontally and vertically.
Yeah.
And I think that's how the different hospital systems are responding to the changing marketplace. So it's hard to predict other than that there's going to be more of it, but the hospitals, the ones that are going to succeed, are the ones that know how to adjust to that.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something to size and scale, and we've seen a lot of consolidation in healthcare. You mentioned horizontal and vertical. We live in Texas. There's Baylor Scott & White Health, which is one of our big health systems in Dallas-Fort Worth, down our I-35 corridor, and Memorial Hermann down in Houston have proposed to merge. I mean, so we're seeing those kind of statewide health systems form.
If we wanted to look at this report again in a year or two, is the data static? Is it something that can be looked at again?
It can be looked at again, but evaluation is as of a point in time. So if you got a year or two down the road, you'd want to update for the financial information. You'd want to look at the current transaction environment. You'd want to revisit a lot of the key assumptions.
Well, and of course, as you kick the can down the road, not only do you change the lease value indication, because there's no longer 9 years, there's 8 years, but also the seismic 2030 thing is closer and closer. And who's ever going to operate the hospital in the future is going to need to decide how they're going to respond to the 2030 seismic codes. And again, the longer you wait, the harder it is to deal with that. And the fewer decisions you have, or the fewer options you have. in terms of whether to replace what needs to be replaced in the current building versus taking that money and using it somewhere else.
I mean, that's true. That's true. And that's one of the items that's TBD. I know the board's looking at different seismic opportunities.
Yeah. So just in summary, and if anybody has any questions or comments, we'll open it. We will be getting in December the seismic report. And then it'll be up to the new board to look at all of this information and decide how it wants to proceed in terms of looking at the future, the current and the future lease. Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
Any comments or questions from the public? Any more from the board? Okay, thank you very much for the report.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is the Desert Healthcare District Interim CEO Report. And that is page 247 in your hymnal.
So this is the monthly update that we do with our milestones and priorities.
This is the monthly report that we update to communicate with the board where we stand on our priorities and milestones that we are utilizing interior-wise as far as everything that we're working on daily, weekly, etc. So it's there for your review. Any questions that you might have that we could entertain?
Could someone expand on the accreditation requirement? Oh no, that's under the successful list.
It's currently ongoing.
Is that what's our role in that versus tenant?
Oh, what accreditation by what?
Here I am in milestone. I'm on page just to make everybody's 247.
The accreditation
is district accreditation.
Correct.
Association of California.
Gotcha. I'm thinking of hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much easier at ACHD.
And that is something that several of the directors have asked the staff to focus on and give us a timetable as to what needs to be done and when it can be done in order to get accreditation from the Association of California Health Districts.
And we are working on that. We will have updated probably for the November meeting.
Thank you. I think that's a good summary of where we are, and I appreciate that report. Now I'll turn to Mrs. Finney for an update from Desert Regional Medical Center CEO report.
So I just have a few items to update you on. First, we have been very focused. We have been very focused on preparing for the flu season. Should we end up with a robust flu season? So we've been doing some things to prepare both the physical plant and the people resources. As I previously reported to you, we did bring online some additional emergency room treatment spaces, 6 additional bays. We've opened up a couple of new urgent care centers. We have a third urgent care center, which is in planning, although that will not be open in time for the November, December, January period. And we did make some modifications of moving our cardiac rehab space out into the Sturgios building so that we could keep the hospital proper space more focused on individuals with higher acute care needs. In addition, we have pre-purchased, for lack of a better word, or pre-scheduled seasonal staff so that our emergency rooms and ICUs and med-surg units can flex up with what we would anticipate to be peak season preparation. So that has been a main focus. The other focus is, and I believe it was actually mentioned a little bit earlier, State of California did pass some new homeless discharging legislation. That legislation will be going into place the January 1st of this upcoming year. So we are in the process of evaluating all of our policies, procedures, and processes with regard to the discharging of homeless individuals. They are scheduled to partake in a couple of WebExes from industry leaders at the California Hospital Association and some additional associations on interpretation, documentation, and compliance with these new regulations. They do encompass both inpatients and emergency room discharges, so it will be a pretty robust evaluation that needs to take place, as well as documenting that we are meeting the requirements from bathing, meal planning, discharge medications, transportation needs, clothing appropriate to the weather environment at time of discharge. Third item, I just wanted to remind you, we do have a new chief nursing officer that is joining us. His name is Scott Moray, and he was first day at work will be November 5th. He's going on a very nice trip to Europe because we plan on working him very hard upon his arrival. And so he will be starting on that date. On the capital front, we did approve another $1.5 million worth of capital expenditures. I could give you the list, but it probably wouldn't be too exciting unless some of you have interest in surgical slush machines, as well as some x-ray equipment and eye microscopes, transport monitors, and a variety of different items. That brings our capital expenditure for this year up to a little bit over $21 million of investment, both plant and equipment. And last but not least, we are preparing for three different surveys that will be taking place over the next month. We will be undergoing our renewal on our comprehensive stroke designation. We will be undergoing accreditation for our acute rehab unit by CARF, and we are scheduled for a Joint Commission specialty certification in spine and hips and knees. And then if anybody has any questions for me, happy to answer.
Any questions from the directors? Okay, item J, I'm going to give a brief report from the governing board meeting that took place on October 18th. We had a presentation from the Government Relations Department for California. I can't remember his name, but he gave a very comprehensive evaluation of the issues that are facing federal, state, and local. In addition, he announced that the Desert Care Network is fully in support of Measure BB, and that was publicized, and anybody wants to read it, it's here. We also had a report from the compliance department about the issues of how compliance is monitored in the hospital, how people are encouraged to come forward when they view issues that are non-compliant. Michelle gave her report, and I just want to add that during that report, she reviewed open and closed cases from the California Department of Public Health, and the board talked about them. One of the good pieces of news was increased patient satisfaction scores over the last couple months, which is a very happy situation.
Four-month trend.
And by the way, that's one of the measures that has been adversely affecting our CMS scores. So we're hoping to see, Desert Regional is hoping to see some from that.
There will be lag, though, so we have to remember.
Oh, right, there's a lag.
We've got 2014, 2015,
right.
Lag data.
And then I just want to mention a new policy because it was talked about or brought up at one of our prior district meetings, and that there is now a new policy of not moving patients after dark unless there's a clinical indication. In other words, moving them from one ward to another unless there's a clinical reason to do that. The quality report was gone through by the board and reviewed areas where we're not meeting the measure and what's being done. And finally, the usual credentialing and recredentialing and peer review activities were done by the governing board, and we participated in that fully. So that's the end of my report. Did you want to add anything to that?
No, that's very comprehensive. Thank you.
Okay. And now I'll turn to Finance, Administration, Real Estate, and Legal Committee. Director Matthews.
Let me take this for a second. In your packet are the minutes on page 251 of the meeting. I draw your attention to an action the committee kind of didn't take. Is if you on page 253, three, we tabled the seismic issue and agreement. Kaufman Hall's done great work for us, prepping for the district expansion and things like that. But they're also, so they're involved in the ad hoc committee on new providers, facilities, programs, services, the seismic assessment. And so we forward that item to the board with no action, and I don't know if we're taking it up later. But we also suggested that we slow down our work with Kaufman Hall. Correct me if I'm getting this wrong.
It's not seismic. It's the issue of facilities. Looking at the facilities in the future, we're going to wait until the new board gets
right.
And we did table it. This is September minutes. We did bring it to the September board meeting, and that addendum for future work was approved at the September.
Okay. I pulled that out of the minutes, and so we're in good shape.
I made the same mistake.
Yeah, all right. Well, good. And that's not merely my age. All right, then the auditor's report is the next item in there.
Actually, the leasing, Las Palmas leasing
update. Leasing update, and that's an, that's, is that, it doesn't say action. Is there anything
it's
we have?
It's just information.
No, it's just
information. There's an item in there. There's very few spaces available, the same two. Does anybody have any questions on that? Now we're at the audit report, which we just had a presentation on. Anything you want to add, Chris?
Just that, you know, the audit went very smoothly. You know, the relationship with the auditors is good. The only point that they reiterate with this is that we're a small staff, and so from a perspective of internal controls, checks and balances, they just like to point that out. They like to see a larger staff with broader segregation of duties. However, they do note that we do have set up with controls where we do have the board that is involved with, you know, reviewing, signing checks, transactions, etc., that it does mitigate any major concerns that they would have. So other than that, there were no exceptions. Clean audit, financial reports put on for fiscal year of 2019.
I move that the audit report be accepted.
I'll second, but I think you have a question as well.
I had a question. In the past, during audit reports, the auditing company had interviewed members of the board as part of their process. Did they do that this time?
Yes, they did.
I was interviewed.
Oh, thank you.
One second. So, I don't know. I mean, to me, the last time I remember, the audit firm doing that, they interviewed everybody, or at least they asked you to sign a document. Was that a one-time thing?
I don't believe so, no. Did you not get that this year?
Nobody contacted me. I had to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Or
I
noted that in the letter or in the report, it says that there was...
There is a document that was submitted to all five board members.
For?
When? To sign?
During the audit. It was an informational document that goes to each of the board members. I'll provide it again. I know that I put it in your box.
It was in the mailbox.
In my mailbox?
But it didn't require any action. It was for information only.
Sure.
I think the term that we're reacting to is interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That did not happen, and so if that's what it says,
and they
so
don't
apparently
interview,
they interviewed one person.
Well, they interviewed me.
Two people.
They typically interview the finance chair and the board president.
Ah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have a motion and a second.
Any other questions? Are there any other questions? Okay, that's
I have one more observation. In the future, can we have a presentation by our auditor to the full board?
We will do that next year, yes.
Lots of questions can come up when they make a presentation.
I think you had already decided to do that for next year, too, didn't we?
Yeah, no, and if the board wants to invite them, they'd gladly come. I mean, it's if you want to... But no, I mean, it's
I think it's good
no one should stand between you and your auditor.
I actually think, rather than necessarily wait till the report, we're going to have at least three new members of the board in January, and education needs to occur on the finances, and that would be a good opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, if I can use a bad metaphor. But.
Well, and when I first took my seat 4 years ago, one of the things that I did was meet with staff and go over the financial statement in detail so I could understand it.
And that is part of the board orientation program that we currently have.
Okay, roll call for the action item, K1C.
Director Wertham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye.
That's the audit report.
320.
Yeah, the lease extension on Suite 2W203, Desert Family Medical. We approved that at the committee, and I'd move approval as well.
Is there a second?
I second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Director Wertham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye.
In addition, there's a lease addendum from Dr. Awad, also at Las Palmas Medical Plaza, and the committee approved that as well, so I move approval of that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Director Wertham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye.
Item 350, or item on page 353, there's a particular employee that had excess vacation times and long-term great employee, and the committee recommended we cash that out. It's not a huge amount of money. It's under $5,000, and the committee felt, because of the long-standing nature of that particular employee and the work that we've had to do, that we recommended that be paid out, and I would move that as well.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, roll call.
Director Wertham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye.
And there's been much discussion in and around the District Foundation Alternative Work Week, and I'm going to turn that back to the CEO.
Somehow I thought you might. At the September 25th board meeting, we did propose the potential of switching the office hours or the work week to a 4-10 work week. It was directed by the board to take this back for further review and discussion, working with the staff. We also implemented what was a process of doing a confidential ballot with all of the staff to determine ultimately what their preference was, and it required a two-thirds vote of the staff, and the outcome of that, which was just learned today, we had to do a 14-day notice period, and that was completed today, and the outcome of that was the opting for a proposed 980 work schedule, which is 9 days of work with an alternating Friday off. The plan then would be to alternate staff so that we do have the office open
every Friday, and what would allow 9 working days with the 10th day would be off for certain staff members. The intent or desire would be to implement that beginning November 5th, and what you have before you in the packet is a policy to approve for alternative work week schedule, and that is what would be before you today, and if you have any questions regarding what the proposed plan would be.
Do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I think that's a great solution. I was uncomfortable closing where no one was around for a government agency, and I appreciate the staff putting that together, so I'll move approval of that.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is there any more discussion? I just have a question. If somebody wanted to take a day other than the every other Friday off and you approved it, say, a Wednesday because they wanted to do something, is that, and it was in the same pay period, is that something that they could do with your permission?
As long as it's within that proper pay cycle.
Right, okay.
So like, for example, they can't swap one Friday to the other because it throws it into a different cycle.
Right.
Regarding.
Got it.
So it'll be managed accordingly.
Great. Okay, no more discussion? We'll call the question.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
President
Hi. Vice President Rogers, the Hospital Governance and Oversight Committee.
Thank you.
These are all information items.
All information items. Thank you. Yes, President Zendel and I had a meeting on October 18th for the Hospital Governance and Oversight Committee meeting. We had a good discussion, one on 2018 patient safety and quality initiatives by Christine Leigenwalter, who is the Chief Quality Officer for Desert Regional. She talked about the 2018 safety and quality initiatives by the hospital. One of several initiatives was patient safety, including the fact that the hospital now has a obstetric hospitalist 24/7 on regulatory and accreditation. We talked about behavioral patients, behavioral health patients, 5150s, screening tools, constant observers, problems of the float pool, covering those, and that there was discussion about SB 1152, which was the homeless initiative.
Discharge patient.
Yes. And what I do have is the handout that they gave, which you'll find very interesting, which is the health and safety code for California, which is new rules dealing with hospital patient discharges. And I'll pass that down for staff and anybody else who wishes to look at it. I did get an okay that it is a public document, obviously. And then next we talked about the hospital safety and compliance inspections. And if you look at your packet on page 366, starting at 362, we were looking at adopting an inspection schedule. This would be an offshoot of the CBRE facility review that we had of the hospital, and would just be an addendum to that. If you look at the inspection schedule that's presented by how Grossman Hospital offers it, they do a quarterly inspection, and then it breaks it down into reported items and how they look up and follow up, things in progress. I think that that's a very detailed look at schedule and matrix. Mr. Scott, did you have anything to add about it?
No, I don't.
I'll just add, and you said it, but last year we did sort of an all-hospital inspection. It was the first time it had been done, I think, that we know or I knew of, and it was very helpful, I think, for both sides. Now, rather than wait every few years and do the whole hospital again, it's a schedule to do one part of it every quarter, so that over a 24-month cycle, we basically have reviewed the hospital. And the committee recommended that staff work with the leadership of the hospital to come up with some processes to do that, and possibly a person to do that. And so that's where that is now.
Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, I'm going to now turn to the Board and Staff Communication Ad Hoc Committee.
Director Hazen, did you want to say anything, or just?
We have a workshop scheduled for Thursday, and I think staff is putting the posting together, or did it go out?
We'll have the agenda posted first thing in the morning.
So the agenda will be posted in the morning, and then on Thursday we'll gather and go through a few things and have a discussion. It's a workshop, and so its intention is for a discussion, input and feedback from the board on ways to strengthen our communication and our policies and systems related to communications. Looking forward to it.
Great.
Thank you.
Under new business, we deferred an item from the earlier meeting so that you could be here, Director Hazen.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to turn to Vice President Rogers, who will present
I had made a motion for Resolution 1808, page 10 of your first agenda, our special meeting agenda. It's basically, it's a resolution in support of Measure BB.
A bunch of whereases and a therefore. And I'll second that. Or was it already seconded? You seconded it.
I never
seconded it. So is there any discussion on accepting this resolution?
I got something to say.
Really?
Yeah, I do. As I said earlier in the meeting, while I support the expansion of the district, I'm not enthusiastic about no funding despite promises to that, and so therefore I won't be supporting this particular motion. Not because I don't think the district expansion is a great idea for the Coachella Valley. I think it's important and it's the right thing to do for the district. The problem is the existing taxpayers pick up the tab for the entire valley, and as I said in my earlier comments, it will not surprise me if we have liquidity problems in the next 5 years at the healthcare district. And have to reevaluate that. And I also acknowledge the chairman is promising us, as other directors, that there will be funding somewhere. And I look forward to that. Thank you.
If I can do a little rebuttal.
Please.
I think as we saw today with the grants we made, these organizations serve people on both sides of Cook. And it makes no more sense to look at healthcare in the Coachella Valley on one half of the Coachella Valley. It just makes no sense. 20-30% of the patients at Desert Regional come from the East Valley. The organizations are support people from both sides. As far as the taxpayers in the West having their money pay for this, I disagree. Everybody pays the same property tax. It's just that an agreement was made in 1948 to have the county give back that money to the district to help healthcare in the valley. And I maintain you can't help healthcare in the valley just by helping half of the valley. So we will have to find other funds. I think that there will be many opportunities to do that. I believe that not only are there federal and state funds that we can now go after because we're serving the whole valley, especially the east part of the valley, which has so much disparity in terms of health care and the things that lead to health care. And I also think that there are granting organizations that are very interested in improving health care, especially in the East Valley, and we can partner with them because we have the expertise in working with these organizations, and we'll be able to get other funds. So I'm optimistic, and I'm also optimistic that as the county looks at this and realizes that they have not stepped up and done their responsibility in terms of the healthcare needs of the Coachella Valley, that we'll be able to put increasing pressure on them to do that and possibly get more funds from the county too. So that's my rebuttal. Any other comments?
Well, I may as well make some since you waited. Just a couple things. The board agrees on expansion. I mean, where there's disagreement is in the how, and some members preferred to get the funding and identify funding and use the possibility of expansion as a mechanism and a lever and some leverage to get additional funding, as a mechanism for moving forward with expansion. And others did. Others were more than willing to expand the district, and then if we expand, the money will come. And there were a couple of other things just to reinforce some of the, because I think that the important underlying thing to remember is that that the district board voted to support this legislation unanimously, and I don't think that's changed. Again, I think there are some differences of opinion about how to implement it, and a desire. There were some differences of opinion along the way, including having only one part of the district vote, and that's a big disappointment for me. I think it would have been a stronger, much stronger and more unifying measure if the entire Coachella Valley had the opportunity to vote. And I've never seen a jurisdictional expansion where the people that were expanding didn't get to vote. So it's a very unusual thing that we're doing. But that just because there are differences doesn't mean that we can't air those differences, make a decision, and then move forward. And so my vote will be reflecting that. I voted against the original funding mechanism. I still disagree with it. But thereafter, I think after that vote was over, I voted pretty much solidly in support of moving forward, because I think that decision has passed. Now, it's while we disagree on how it was done, I think the important thing now is to move forward with the expansion, and so I'll be supporting this, even though I have some disagreement with various elements of it. And I'll do, on the board or off the board, I'll do everything I can to see and support efforts to gain and attach and secure additional funding, because that's what's really going to make the difference. We can do everything that we want to do today the same as we will tomorrow in expansion. The only thing that will change until and if we secure additional funding is where those funds can be expanded. That's all that will change. And I would like to suggest that the board consider immediately moving forward once it expands to fully fund those collective funds. Immediately and start granting those funds and moving funds into the community because there will be no barrier to how the board chooses to fund programs. And so once the expansion happens, I think the important thing will be moving to help as many people as possible. So thanks for the opportunity to comment. Oh, one more thing. I'm sorry, Jennifer. Just one more thing. Because, I mean, on the taxing, the way that happened was not exactly the way you said. And so I think at some point we should just make sure that that historical taxing and the decisions that were made is captured so that we don't repeat misinformation. Where the change happened, before Prop 13, the board was able to assess on parcels. In Prop 13, that changed, and there was no longer that ability. The county didn't do anything willingly. It was an authority that was granted to the district. It was 10 cents per, I think 20 cents, up to 20 cents per 100 valuation in 1948 till Prop 13 happened. Then there was a formula that was applied across the board. And so, to this day, yes, we all pay the same property tax. What changed is that now it isn't assessed parcel by parcel specifically, but it is assessed according to that original parcel formula. And so that, in effect, it is still tied to the West Side properties. It is not a specific parcel by parcel. So, I mean, is that right, Jeff?
I was really hoping not to get into this. But,
it's complicated.
No. It's a complicated situation. But basically, what happened was, in the 50s, in the 60s, and early 70s, there was an ability for the district, either through the people themselves or through the board of directors, to create taxes, utilize property taxes to benefit the healthcare district or the hospital district in those days. So everything was going along swimmingly, as they say, until Prop 13 came along. And when Prop 13 came along, it said 1% of your assessed value, period. So then there was this food fight, which ended up in Prop 4, which basically was an allocation formula. So what they said was, okay, so you folks in, you know, the Desert Healthcare District voted to tax yourself to benefit the hospital, or you, the board of directors, taxed to benefit the hospital. And so what they did was they said, well, we're going to, you know, everybody's going to pay the same taxes in the county now, and it's going to be 1% of the assessed value, period. But what we're going to do is enter into kind of an allocation. And so special districts like healthcare districts or hospital districts in those days were given, there's a formula that was, they were given a portion of those taxes. And so those, a portion of the taxes that go to the county come to the district residents. So right. That's basically what happens. Everybody, you're correct, everybody pays the same amount of taxes. But in fairness, the people of the district did actually tax themselves at one time.
That's right.
If I can just take that scenario, does that mean that since the money was used to build Desert Hospital, that Desert Hospital could only serve people west of Cook? Of course not.
No.
Okay, so from the very beginning, the money that was raised from the property tax or whatever from the West Valley residents was used to serve whoever came to the hospital.
Different issue.
Yeah, I mean, there could be people come here in the winter, and they're from Canada,
right,
and wherever. I mean, but the point was is that somebody had to be, they had to get money to build a hospital, and they had to come, you know, it came from, there was federal grants, and there was state money, but Hill Burton funds and things like that, but there was property taxes, and they had to tax themselves in order to do that. But yes, the hospital has benefited across the valley.
So I take the same thing and I say, okay, the money that we now get from the county, I don't think it's right for somebody who lives in Palm Springs to say, I don't want any of that money to help somebody in need in India. That's just my reason.
Neither do I.
None of us feel that way. But okay. Remember that that's a whole different code, because there's the health and safety code placed the restrictions on healthcare districts that predominantly should be used for, just like with cities.
Right, but now
predominantly
that,
but you shouldn't be taking your taxpayer money, city of Cathedral City, and serving predominantly the citizens of Palm Springs. And so cities and other public entities have to face the same sort of measure.
But now with the expansion of the healthcare
district.
Whatever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Getting
just
back
the
to the
taxing
resolution.
Thing that, that
oh, yeah.
we were
okay.
taking issue with. That's all. But for the most part, I think, as I said, we all agree with the desire to serve the Valley more broadly. And it's just a question of how, and that's going to be resolved shortly.
So there's a motion on the table and seconded to support, that the board supports Measure BB. Any other comments? Any public comment? Then we'll call the roll.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
No.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye. Okay.
Thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
Thanks for explaining it. We had to wait for that.
Could you put all this thing in writing about the taxes?
Yeah.
So that
yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're now going to turn to legal comments and report from Jeffrey G. Scott, Esquire.
Well, you know, I'd just like to say that given the fact that this is a 417-page agenda, my report's only 2 pages. It's pretty good. Yeah, you know, I've been doing this at a very, very, very long time. And this year is the first year that there's been any focus or adjustment on healthcare district directors' compensation. I mean, I'm talking 40 years, okay? And this year, legislation was passed, AB 2329, that added the number of meetings that board members can be compensated for from 5 meetings to 6. And so that's significant.
Per month?
Per month. Okay, but really, I mean, when you consider nothing's been done for decades. And they did a really smart thing, which is healthcare district directors in some districts complain that their stipend for attendance at meetings and such was $100 a meeting. And it's been like that, like I said, for as long as I can remember. Now, they tied it to a provision in the water code that they did with water districts, because there's a ton of water districts all over the state. And basically allows for 5% increases per year, so that you don't have to go back up to the legislature every few years and ask for an increase. But in order to take advantage of that, you have to have an ordinance, and you have to have a public hearing, and you have to have the ability for the public to come in and complain that they don't think it's appropriate that the elected official should be raising their stipend from $100 to $105. So, significant legislation for the future, potentially. So that was passed. And then the other thing I would like to report on is what I'll call the Ribbentrop case, which just was first an unpublished decision and then was published in September. And it was a decision with the city of Long Beach. And basically what it did is it reinforces the public's right to speak at board meetings and city council meetings and have public comment. But it also reinforces the right of the public agency to limit that and to control that reasonably. And so it's a good case, and I think it's good for both sides, so to speak. And that's all I have. Thank you.
I have a question for you. We all received in the last month a judgment from the U.S. Supreme Court relative to the Solomon case.
Yes,
former director of this district. Can you brief us on that?
Well, that case was tried, and the trial court ruled in favor of the district and found that the lawsuit was, in essence, what they call a slap suit, or it's almost frivolous. And that was appealed to the appellate court. And I believe there's an appellate court decision on the website if one goes to them correct. There's the decision of the Court of Appeals, and that could explain the case much better than I did. It's a very thoughtful opinion. It goes through the arguments and found in favor of the district. That was appealed to the California Supreme Court, and the appeal was denied, and then it was ultimately appealed to the United States Supreme Court, and they didn't take it up. So it's over, and it's done. And there is going to be an argument over how much attorney's fees are going to have to be paid by the plaintiff, and that's basically the only issue left for the trial court to decide.
Thank you.
All right. Item O is an informational item in your packet, just what the current progress third quarter 2018 of the CV link is. It's not the most exciting reading in the world, but for those of you who live in South Palm Springs near Demuth Park, you will find it interesting. And then finally, for director's comments, reports, and staff, I just put some slides in from what I thought was the most interesting presentation at the Association of California Health Plans from someone from the California Hospital Association about inpatient psych beds. And I'll just draw your attention. It's in the packet on page 11 that says between 1995 and 2016, there was over a 20% decrease in facilities, inpatient psych facilities, a 28% decrease in beds, but a 24% increase in the population. And since 2013, there have been some new beds opened, and there are some new beds that are projected. There is a potential of a new facility in Indio that the planning committee decided it didn't want to have it be where this place wanted it to be, and so they're now looking at alternatives, but we're hopeful that that will move forward somewhere in the valley. Carol, did you want to report on?
Yes, I did. And I would like to see this board come out in favor as a board to support Acadia's proposal for a 140 bed, well, starting out at 80 to 180 bed inpatient psychiatric hospital, desperately needed. If you look at the report that Dr. Zendel posted from the California Hospital Association psychiatric bed department, Riverside County needs 1,194 inpatient beds, and that report is 2 years old. So we're in an acute phase, and I would like to see this board go on record when we get some more information about Acadia's hospital proposal going forward and support it as best we can. Okay. California District Association Annual Conference, I have a written report. The first session that I went to was titled keynote speaker, Standout Leadership, Lead Like You Mean It by Connie Podesta. It was very entertaining. I've got a link on there to go to a website to her book that she shared with all the attendees, but I see that anybody can get online and look at it. There's a
10 things to quit to be more successful.
Yes. Yes, and it talks about how to create a working team and understanding. It's a really good approach on looking at people's idiosyncrasies. And one of the exercises that she gave was what shape describes your personality. So you have to think about it and then think whether you are a circle or a square or a triangle or a squiggly. And you're supposed to right now, we want to see what your personality shape is.
Can I be an octagon?
Yeah, participate. And then go read the book because it's really cute. It really very, very interesting. Yeah. So in the second session I attended was called You're Out of Order, Meeting Protocols That Best Serve the Public by Brent Ives, who was previously a consultant for us. And he showed some entertaining videos of public meetings that were chaotic. That
We weren't in there, were we?
Any doesn't matter.
Ours were well organized.
So some of the suggestions were, and I highlighted on my report, the last one he said was, don't throw any board member or staff under the bus. End of report.
Okay. Any other board members have any comments before we move on?
Do we have a director report?
That's what we're doing now.
That's what we're doing right now.
Because I have a handout.
You passed it out. You just passed it out.
That one, I have another one.
Oh, we'll miss it. What's that one?
Actually,
email it to us.
Well, I will email it to you, but it's basically something that has just come down from the Ninth Court of Appeals that affects homelessness in our valley. And I will email it because I tried to print it and it didn't come out to a readable, something readable. But what it does say is that municipalities are no longer able to arrest a person for being homeless, for camping out on the street. Last Thursday, City of Palm Springs City Council and the police department had a powwow on how they were going to address this issue, and it's just going to exacerbate more the issue of homelessness in our area. And this takes into account the Ninth Court of Appeals, which is Washington, Oregon, Idaho, California, whatever. So it's going to be have a huge impact on homelessness in our valley.
So people can camp now on the streets. They can disregard the camp be there from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Exactly. People can post a tent on the sidewalk in front of your business.
Well, no, they can't. They can't block a business. It has more to do with parks and things
true.
Like that.
I'm sorry. Public property. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other director comments before we move on to the... Okay, this meeting is adjourned, and I'm going to call to order the foundation meeting, which hopefully will be quick. And can we have a call to order, a roll call?
We have Director Hartham.
Here.
Director Hazen.
Here.
Director Matthews.
Here.
Vice President Rogers.
Here.
And President Zendler.
Here. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Is there any public comment? Hearing none. There's a consent agenda that includes board minutes, finance administration minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. item F, the Finance and Administration Committee, we have two action items.
The item, the Moss, Levy, and Hartson audit report. For the foundation, I would move approval of that.
I move to approve.
Is there any discussion?
A question.
Yeah. Oh. Questions?
On page 27 of 82, this is the showing the grants and social service, other the functional expenses for 2018 compared to 2017. Just thought I'd point out that in 2018, the grants and social services line item is $5.3 million. So, you know, sometimes we gloss over the fact that this district and its investment in the community is significant. I think the largest year I remember is $14 million. But $5.3 million is not insignificant, and I thought I would just call attention to it, and so that the board could acknowledge that a lot of work has been done, and the staff, we can thank the staff and those who have been partnering with us all this time, because I think that's a pretty significant investment.
Why is it so different than 2017? Just because of the homeless initiative?
Mm-hmm. Behavioral health, and then also the Avery Trust funds that are brought over for the...
Okay, so this doesn't include the grants that were made through the district.
No. This is the foundation, and so this is just recognizing that the foundation, which has become an implementer for significant initiatives out of the district in our larger strategies for change, this is recognizing that it's working. Because that investment is moving out and into the community and into programs and services. So which makes me very happy because it doesn't necessarily reflect that most of this money, if not I think most of this money, has gone similarly to partners. And we've been working through partners of a wide variety. But we've added programs and services substantially. So.
I would just add to that the one of the reasons the district, the foundation, does that well, is because as a public agency, we're very transparent in how business is transacted. So others are willing to partner with us because of the history of success and the transparency that's available that may not be in other non-profit organizations. So it's really a salute to one, the transparency. Two, the community involvement, and three, the trust of philanthropic types to give money to this organization.
Thank you.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second to accept the report. Any other questions or discussion? Call the roll.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zendel?
Aye. And page 34, transfer of funds.
Am I doing?
So transfer to investments.
I must admit I looked at my iPhone to see the score of the Boston game.
What are they doing, Mark?
This is
we're losing 5-3.
Uh-oh.
Consideration.
What's
that?
McDonald's not a Dodgers fan.
Yeah. Well, I'm not either, but we're down to that. Consideration to approve the transfer funds to the foundation operating account to the investment account. I would move approval of that.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Call the roll.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zindel?
Aye. CV HIP.
So as per September board meeting, we had disclosed that staff had become aware of an alternative software program that not only is very similar to our current CV HIP, it also offers supporting services that we had presented back in March under the concept of a CV HIP 2.0. So there is three different recommendations in our staff report. We have kept the branding aspect tied to this because it does tie into how we move forward. So I will start with the staff is recommending and requesting the board to consider us to continue working on a mutually beneficial partnership with IEHP as their program is fully funded. They have committed over $3 million and are in a 5-year contract with the platform provider. They are open to a significant partnership between us and ConnectIE. They are open to all different types of thoughts, so we could maintain our own logo and identity, but ultimately the platforms would be joint, and what in turn would enable us to capture data from all Coachella Valley residents, even if they were to receive services outside of the Coachella Valley, so we would be able to track it. The majority of the information is in the supporting document, so I'll stop there and see if there's further questions on the IHP Connect.
What would be the relationship between us and IEHP then? Are we a subsidiary of them, or are they a subsidiary of us?
So currently, the other two partners have an MOU that has not been signed. And so one of the things that we've talked internally on staff is we know that our data and our platform is very important to us, and we've worked very hard to build this platform. So as an example of this continuing this conversation, let's say they have all intents and purposes shown financially and on their board minutes that they are committed to this being for the long haul. However, something can change. So we would want to work with them in the MOU that we would go into partnership with them, that if for some reason they were to pull out, that the district could then take back the Coachella Valley portion of the platform and continue. But it's not a hierarchy, it's a partnership.
Okay, but how does IEHP feel about other agencies? Because we're making CVHIP available to anybody, which would now include their data, and they don't mind sharing that with possibly competitors?
Not at all. Actually, their platform far exceeds ours and is open to everyone. And they are already in the Coachella Valley marketing this platform. So right now, from the outside perspective, we look like we're in competition with them.
When you say marketing, you mean they're selling it?
No, they're trying to get partners. So Alejandro and his grassroots efforts going and working with the agencies and showing them how the platform is used, how they can, they can actually do the tracking, it ties to the medical records. So right now, they have a far superior platform than we do.
So it's open to the public. It's a public entity,
okay.
So it's open.
Is there any downside that you can see that we should be aware of?
No, I don't think there's any downside. I mean, a good example is what the hospital has to go through with their discharge program. This software would be able to track all of it, the medical record side and all the resources that they're referring, and track those resources. So it would solve one of their issues with the homeless discharge plan.
And does it get through HIP?
We were looking at with the CVHIP 2.0 that we were looking to progressively transition to. The IE Connect already has that, which as Lisa was just describing, that we will be developing. So they already have that in our platform.
But you said it connects to the medical record. How do you get through HIPAA issues?
So the way they've worked is it's just like when we presented to you in March under the Helpify, they have been able to create a very separate back end to the platform, so only medical providers can access that back end. And so it goes through an actual, for lack of better words, a filtration system to protect all the private information to facilitate the compliance of HIPAA.
It's part of HIE legislation, and so HIEs are allowed. Health information exchanges are allowed, and so it's a health.
Without individual permission from the patient.
Exactly.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Patients can opt out less. There's things in the legislation when a patient gets admitted to a hospital, but that data, HIE allows a patient. A physician at Desert to see the medical record of a patient if they're in the emergency room who maybe saw the night before at another hospital, they can see that medical record information, and only the doctors can see it. So it's considered an exchange of information. It's not released to insurance companies or anybody else. It's to facilitate quality of care.
Okay.
It's very progressive.
Kay, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the devil's in the details, so it depends on what the MOU, you know, that's going to come back, right?
Right.
So you're asking for board support to take that next step and begin to talk about terms and conditions and cost and
right.
All the rest.
So at this point, our second request is for the board to assign an ad hoc committee so we can go down that road. So basically, we would continue our relationship development with IHP and have an ad hoc that would help go through the process of developing that MOU.
So is that what you want first?
Well, I'm a little concerned because, you know, every time we have something come up, we don't just form an ad hoc committee. I think you want to, you're better served to... refer this to more traditional standing type committees, and I know we're going to talk about that at the workshop, but I feel a little uncomfortable with just simply creating ad hocs and ad hocs, because it's, you know, we don't want
to
be too fast
and
loose. So, but I mean, basically you're going to go to a committee and come back to a board, so.
So I mean, what I'm hearing is let's move forward, but let's decide how we're going to assign board participation to help you, whether it's through. But does anybody object to them moving on to the next step to bring something forward?
No.
Is that?
Mm-hmm. Uh-uh.
Okay.
So then that ties to getting the board to give us a sense of do they want to keep the identity of CBHIP? So there's two ways we can move forward. Do we just move forward and embrace the Connect IE, or do we move forward and maintaining our branding of CBHIP? And if so, we then have recommended that we continue doing some marketing to keep moving forward with the energy and effort that's been put in since May of this year as far as the CBHIP brand and look.
Huh?
And what's the downside of that?
Downside is it's an investment. The upside is what we hear out on the street from community members is they don't relate in the Coachella Valley to the Inland Empire. They don't see themselves as part of the Inland Empire. So there is definitely an advantage of maintaining CBHIP based on being the Coachella Valley. We've been in conversation with the staff in the sense of a co-branding on the landing page, or we keep our own existing landing page, just like how CBHIP works now, and then you go into the search engine. So they're very open at this point in time to have these conversations with us, and they are in agreement that they do believe that we are correct in saying that people in the Coachella Valley just do not relate to Inland Empire.
I agree with that.
But
I don't. I think we shouldn't be redesigning anything at the moment until there's, you know, a clear and solid direction. But that's a separate question to whether you should continue promoting. And I think we should continue promoting what we have until we don't have it anymore. Otherwise, you know, why are we having it? I mean, I think we need to continue the promotion.
So currently, the only thing that we've talked about in this recommendation is just the current landing page, because what we've done through analysis is we are basically, we are getting the hits to go to the landing page, but they're not converting over in any shape or form. So we are not being effective with our marketing. And so as part of the budget, there's a $2,500 allocation just to redo the look and feel of the landing page. Not the logo, but just the pictures and the call to action.
Well, I'm in the wrong business. That seems significant to me. I mean, more than a new look and feel. What I read in the staff report was related to that it lacks some sort of action, a call to action.
Correct.
So, I mean, that can't be too difficult to resolve. But somebody's saying that it's going to take another $2,500 on top of the investment we've already made. And then additional media money, is that what we're saying here?
Correct. So the concept was when everybody met from O'Bailey and the staff team and went based on community input, people weren't relating to the pictures that were used on the front. So this was an up to $2,500 to redesign that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. The remaining $18,000 of the proposed from O'Bailey, who we're still in contract with, was basically to do very identified market segmentation using geofencing and, you know, some low-cost promotional type media coverage.
I told you the picture of the guy with the man bun was not a good idea.
Yeah, they're the same people that did the first go-around. That makes me a little nervous about, you know, that, well, let's just keep using the same book and do the same thing.
I don't feel like I have enough information to answer your question.
I'd like to see it first. I'd like to see sort of what are we talking about here. I mean, here's the kind of thing that we'd like to do, a comp, something for us to be able to say, you know, here's where we need to go and here's why. I don't want to get too into the weeds on this stuff, but I mean, just up here, I agree with seeing a little bit more about what are we trying to resolve and how are we proposing to do that. And then I happen to agree with more digital versus print. What's the splits here? I mean, so I think we need a little more.
Can I put forth a potential alternative?
Sure.
We bypass the landing page and go right to our search engine page. So we continue in the short term to promote CB HIP mm-hmm. as a site, as that name, and we use just the logo, and we don't have the landing page that we know is ineffective.
Okay,
sounds good to me.
I mean, is that what does our consultants say? I mean, we have paid consultants.
The consultants are in agreement that they felt that the landing page was not designed in a way that is attracting people, and so the $2,500 actually came from the website company that created it based on their artwork, and so the consultant has chosen to allow them to now design something because obviously they were, how do I want to say, it's time for a change. But an alternative way is
now
to keep this
picture
engine rolling. We
now
could
I'm getting the
continue
picture. Okay.
Moving along on CB HIP, not lose the momentum, but bypass the landing page. And so when you go right into the search engine.
So is this within the current budget, or are you asking for an increase in the budget?
This is within the current budget.
Okay, so I don't think
we don't have to take an action.
You just want our
Why
opinion.
Is this even here, then? If it, I thought this was added.
No, it is.
We do have a marketing budget that was approved with the annual budget. This is approving the ability to engage with the current consultant for an additional.
That's you guys's. I mean,
right.
If it's within the current budget, this is what you get when you bring this here. As it sounds like it's more.
Mm-hmm.
This is all within your, I think. Doesn't everybody agree that? I mean, this is your.
I mean, what I hear is that you'd like to have some board input on it, and that's fine, but maybe at a board meeting is not the best idea, which is why you're asking for some, you called it an ad hoc committee. I don't think it has to be an ad hoc committee, but tell us what you need and we'll decide how to provide it to you.
So here's why it was an action item. Staff needed to determine if the board was married to the CB HIP logo and that identity to continue the partnership with ConnectIE. If they weren't, we would just go into partnership and use ConnectIE and just basically promote that platform. So that's why it was as a staff request for support.
Okay, I think you heard we want CV to be part of the identity.
So staff, is that basically for clarity, staff will move forward, continue working with the partnership, start to establish what an MOU would look like, and then board will make a decision on how to present that MOU concept together. In the meantime, we will use our existing marketing budget to continue the acknowledgement of CBHIP as just the search engine without the landing.
Sounds good to me.
It doesn't require a vote or anything, does it?
No, there's no funding.
Uh-uh. Okay. No, the funding's the same.
Okay. So, ready, set, swim.
Well, and back in the board meeting, you approved the grant application from the foundation to the district to support the grant.
This is just to accept it.
I move acceptance of the
second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Director Wortham?
Aye.
Director Hazen?
Aye.
Director Matthews?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
And President Zinn?
Aye. We don't need to talk about Boys and Girls Club service agreements, all part of that.
Those are just there for your...
Okay. Homeless Initiative, is there any discussion on that?
The only thing I want to add over and above the report, some of you may be familiar with the HEAP funding, which was $500 million from the state of California. Currently, each city had to move forward with identifying resolution of a housing crisis. Out of all the cities in Riverside County, Coachella Valley is the only area of the county that has all nine cities that have actually moved forward and signed that resolution. So we stand in very good standing on accessing HEAP funding, and through the work of the housing core group and also through CBAG Housing, Greg put forward basically a LOI of intent for funding request for the HEAP funding.
I would like, not today, but I'd like at a future meeting to have an update on where Coachella Valley is on residential in the West Valley, because I think that needs to be part of the homeless
under the residential, I'm sorry, for clarity.
Housing.
Yes.
Shelter.
Shelter. Facility.
Facility.
Correct.
I know there's work that's being done.
Correct.
For West Valley Shelter. I'd like to have the board updated on that at the next meeting or when you can.
At the November meeting, it's in our report that at November May, we'll be presenting the Barbara Coffey Strategic Plan and also recommendations from the staff in regards to RSP against the $800,000 remaining in the collective fund and also potential other grant funds, which will include...
So saying that another way, in November, you're going to bring forward the results of what you've been working on for the last few months, including the consultant's work, and with recommendations and action steps to move forward, right?
Yeah.
Including what's on the horizon in terms of CVAG wanting some more money from us to do matching
all
funds for the other cities.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Behavioral Health Initiative.
Basically, as reported, we continue the work with our partners and the Green Ribbon Committee, and we're kind of complementing it with our efforts in regards to homelessness at this given point in time.
Okay. Any comments or questions? California Endowment?
This is just a staff report to update the board and my copy of the two policy information pieces that were released publicly through Supervisor Perez's office held a housing
summit.
Thank you. And I just wanted to share these publicly with the board and also with everyone else. These were acknowledged during that meeting and very much appreciated by the supervisor's office.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to acknowledge that the work we have done through our analysts with the help of the California Endowment has really paid off in terms of we've gotten a lot for our money and their money, actually, and that it's being recognized by people that are using the services for us. So that was a good call. Okay, is there any new business?
Are there any director's comments or reports before adjournment?
I forgot to mention that I got a copy of a wall or door hanger at a conference recently that people are very working very diligently hanging door hangers around the East Valley. Vote yes on DB. Let the directors see them.
Any other director comments? Then the meeting's adjourned. Thank you. At least we're not being kicked out by the custodian this time.